Blog Talk Radio.
If you want groceries in your basket, be with Newt. If you want food upon your table, be with Newt. If you want jobs, 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 and prosperity, be with Newt. Be with Newt. Proud of America, be with Newt. If you think we're exceptional, be with Newt. We are a shining city on a hill. Be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt. If you want to win the future, if you want to save America, be with Newt. A president with real solutions, be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt. A 21st century contract now with Newt. A contract with America, be with Newt. Newt Gingrich is the man with the plan. Be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt. You lead us the right way in the USA. Newt Gingrich, we will win and make America great again. Be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt.
Hello, folks, and thank you for coming to the Friday night Bard's Logic political talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you too could be part of the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com, sign up and be a member of the Twitter team. I'm sure you've been seeing it on Twitter, especially with the hashtag PJNet. Red, hashtag red meat, and hashtag HE3. So check it out. So we had a show with Mark Pratik on a couple weeks ago. Check that out in the archives. It tells you all the benefits about PJNet as well. Just this past Wednesday, so check out the show with the Patriots Bunker. Of course, we're covering all kinds of sites and Patriots out there who are working for the grassroots. Now, tonight, welcome, whether you're listening live or to the archives, to our special edition of Bard's Logic Political Talk on Newt News Fridays. This is episode 2 on media and cultural secularism. Now, I know it is the holidays, so I hope you're having a great Christmas holiday. However, there are still some important things to cover and things for people to remember and pay attention and just to keep it out there. And, of course, as always, callers and chat participation are welcome. Join in to talk to me, the host, our guests, panelists, and, of course, you, the other audience members, in our roundtable discussions. And, of course, all mics stay open. So for those of you out there, either listen to or if you're here live, come and talk about Newt Gingrich's past, and we'll talk some about here on the other series here of Newt News Fridays. We'll, of course, talk some about our experiences when Newt did run for president, and the audio clip that you just heard was from the 2012 campaign, not from the official campaign or national campaign, but from someone who wrote that for the grassroots campaign, the president, which we will cover now here on News Fridays. And also in the future, I know there's a lot of folks out there who are talking about Newt Gingrich running again in 2016. I think that's something that's very important. One of the ways to let Newt that we support him is by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com and go to the Give page. And there you will have some links, also, of course, in this Christmas season, some great links to some really great charities. But also there is a link there to the Patriot Journalist Network where you can help contribute to them. And also you could go to newt.org still and help him to pay on the costs of his 2012 campaign. Of course, he will not run again if he still has debts from the previous one. Now, tonight, Bard's Logic does have our second installment of Newt News Fridays, which we will discuss the Duck Dynasty controversy and how it's really about the growing Christian intolerance in the media. We'll also talk about Newt on ABC's This Week and what he things on the widening income gap. We'll also have some Gingrich production updates, as well as what else Newt has been up to this week. And right now, I will welcome one of our panelists here and fellow Newt Gingrich supporter, and that would be Cindy Todd down in Florida. Well, thank you very much, Cindy, for calling in. How are you?
Hey there. I'm fine.
That's great, and welcome to the second installation of Newt News Friday. I hope as things progress and we do more of these shows, we'll definitely get more of the Newt supporters, which I know are out there because I see the different Twitter and Facebook pages. You know, still supporting Newt, and of course, you know, he's just putting so much stuff out there, as you know. It's great to keep up with what, you know, at least try to keep up with some of the things that he's doing.
Absolutely. And I'm hoping that this will be a very important show in another couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting. Go ahead.
I'm just laughing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to listen back to the archives later and listen to some of the clips that we'll have here, you know, that were played on the show, you know, about what he's talked about. And the first one we'll talk about, this comes from Crossfire, as we know he's on Crossfire. I wanted to try to get some of the audio clips of him on Crossfire tonight, but unfortunately I was unable to do that. But I do have them recorded, so I'm sure I'll have it on the next Newt News Friday. And, of course, this one's about the Duck Dynasty suspension. Mm-hmm. Well, on the surface, I think people, would laugh, like, well, this ain't important. Well, you know, there are definitely other things that, at least for me, are more important, issues out there. But this one, you know, on the surface, it looks like, well, these guys, and they talked about this on Crossfire, well, you know, the A&E suspended them, and it's fully within their right to do so. But, you know, there's some who would say that there could be some underlining reasonings for the suspension. Because it was during an interview, not something he said on the show on A&E, but it's something he actually said in an interview, you know, in a gruff way describing his beliefs. And we'll cover some of that in the audio clips of some things Newt said about it and how it looks like it may be more about the media and the cultural secularism that's, taken over in the media.
You want to know, what I think my take is on that? I think that they baited him. I think they knew exactly what he was going to say, and they would like nothing better than to get rid of Duck Dynasty because they end every night with a prayer in Jesus' name. And these guys are not embarrassed about talking about Jesus on national TV. And I just think that they baited him, and they're hoping that they can get rid of him because of things, politically incorrect things that he says.
And I'll be honest, I've never watched the show. I mean, I don't watch a lot of TV anyway, we know, but, I don't really know a lot about it. I know they've, you know, they just got the show and I really don't know much. But here's how Gingrich opened up, you know, with Crossfire the other day to bring it up, the issue. And let's get the first audio clip here. They're only short clips. The longest ones for this is about a minute long, but this one's only 40, so here you go.
A passage in the Bible. Suspending Robertson, frankly, is a stupid decision. It is truly ironic that the week before Christmas, the head of a Christian family has been suspended for talking about his Christian faith. A&E was content to make millions of dollars as long as viewers were tuning in to watch tamed reality television. But this is true reality. Robertson is who he is. My first advice everyone in the country is take a deep breath. It's Christmas. Be charitable. Try to break out of this cycle of running around, trying out who's going to offend us next.
Right. I mean, we hear that especially from the left all the time, people being offensive. I mean, they say things all the time. You know, well, look what just happened with Palin. Now, he lost his job, but what he was talking about was doing something violent to Sarah Palin, not the Belize. And we're talking about the Bashir.
That was totally different. That was not him expressing an opinion. Right. That was way beyond expressing an opinion.
Right. Now, Mr. Phil Robertson, if he would have said something of that nature on the show, you know, it's what he did. And here's what he said. Let me. I have the. Did you ever watch the show, or did you see the show that they're talking about, Cindy?
I did not see the interview when he was talking about that, but I do watch the show from time to time.
Okay, and yeah, I didn't see the I mentioned earlier. I don't watch the show either, but there was a that he had, and mind you, and we'll talk about this later, is that it was in a magazine. It was actually in a magazine that he did the, you made the quote or talked about it. And then, you know what, I'm trying to look through my papers here that I did for the show, and I can't really find what the quote is. But the paraphrase is he's basically talking about, how he doesn't understand how another man can look at, he says it's something like it's more attractive to see a woman's vagina than it is a man's anus. He's like, come on, dudes. And I think him using those actual words in the interview probably offended a lot of folks. And then basically, he's talked about how, in his belief, homosexuality is a sin.
They are very blunt. Many times they're very blunt about their opinions. And They have a kind. I mean, look at them. You can tell that they're just good old boy.
Good old boy. Yeah.
They're just rednecks, And what do you expect a redneck to say? I mean, those were tame words, compared to what we could say out there. But he's a Christian redneck.
Go ahead. Yeah, he didn't say anything derogative. He didn't call him, the words for homosexuals are. I mean, he didn't say anything about that, But my issue is on that is that the guy said it in an interview with another magazine. As you said, it could have very well been a setup for him, but he didn't say it on A&E. He didn't say it on A&E.
Mm-mm.
He said it in an article because some are saying, "Hey, look, this is his First Amendment rights and free speech to be able to say these things." Without it affecting his, his contracts or things of that nature. Now, they said, well, they're within their rights to suspend them, and perhaps contractually they are, But I'm saying that, in my view, I don't think they should have suspended them just for the fact that the guy said this in another magazine. I mean,
here's the thing: if it had been. If his audience had been a very liberal audience and his remarks had offended his audience, his regular viewers, then I could see why the program would say, hey, look, you're killing your ratings by talking like that. But
mm-hmm.
it's actually probably going to help his ratings, because as soon as everybody sees this huge news buildup, there's going to be a whole lot of people that, what's Ducks Dynasty? I never heard of that. And they're going
right.
to get on there and they're just going to find out who this, what this Duck Dynasty stuff is. You know,
right.
And then it gets talked about. It's actually better for him and the show. So I don't know what they're upset about. They're the only ones that got their feelings hurt.
Right. And okay, I'm trying to – hold on a second. I'm being interrupted by my daughter here.
Oh.
Yes.
Hi,
Laura. Hi. Hi, how are you doing?
Well, here you go.
Hello.
She said, hi, how are you?
Hi.
I'm good.
My name
I'm
is
good.
Cindy. My
hi,
name is Cindy.
I'm Laura.
Hi, Laura. And I met your daddy not too long ago, and I have a grandson that's about your age, and we were thinking it would be great if you guys could have met each other. You're both kind of intelligent people who are, you know, a little above your age.
Okay, I see. Well, I can't wait to meet him then.
Well, someday
what's
maybe.
What's his name?
Laura, you got to get back to
me. Okay, write it on
the all right. Well, yeah, folks, that was my daughter. She guess she came into the office/studio looking for something. One of the organic natures of the show, looking for paper. Here you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, that was interesting, folks. Thank you very much for indulging me. I've never had that happen before. Normally, I lock the door to the office/studio, but I guess, but that's okay. That was my daughter, Laura.
You need to let her come in and let her participate.
Oh, I'd like to. I really want to. Unfortunately, right now, she doesn't have as much interest in politics as I would like her to. But she has more interest in boys and the stuff going on and teen movies and this and that, I guess, you know, but or pre-teen movies or whatever, the politics. I need to change that. But regardless, I don't want to get too off kilter here going about that. I'm trying to say, oh, no, I've got Holly here. He's trying to get in the chat. But if for those of you are having some problems getting to the chat, you're more than welcome to call in at 347-945-7428. Again, it's 347-945-7428. If you'd just like to listen in or to chime in as well. But one of the things that you talked about there on Crossfire, when he was questioning about, he was paraphrasing the Bible and that, you know, wonder if that was some of the stem of some of the problems. And I think that's a good lead-in. He doesn't directly talk about the media's cultural secularism now, but I think it's a good lead-in to it.
My point earlier wasn't that it was illegal. It was stupid. I mean, and as a, you know, in the modern world, we have all sorts of different groups who have strong opinion. There are lots of people out here who feel deeply about a variety of issues. But isn't there some space in civil society for a Christian who is quoting the Bible? And the fact is, while he's clumsy and crude in some ways, he's essentially paraphrasing Corinthians.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing it, by the way, in response to a very specific question. A reporter says to him, how do you think about sin? How do you define sin? And he basically takes St. Paul, and he doesn't do it as well as St. Paul. but doesn't he have the right? But shouldn't people? Isn't there something wrong with punishing somebody for paraphrasing the Bible?
Well, right, and so that's a new, you know, sees it, and you know, and he sees that. Well, Bush had the direct quote there, and I don't know what quote he's talking about with Corinthians. I guess talking about. You know, I guess maybe something St. Paul said or something like that in the Corinthians, or a letter maybe from St. Paul to the Corinthians or something like that, where he was talking about homosexuality. I don't know. Is that it, something you're familiar with, Cindy?
Yes. Paul's Paul's letter to the Romans, in the very first chapter, he talks about that the sin of homosexuality comes from, its roots are based in worshiping the creator, worshiping the creation instead of the creator. And therefore, God gave those people over to a reprobate mind so that they would begin to burn in lust with one another, men with men and women with women. And so basically, if you ask me, it follows a pattern of societies in general. If you look at, as societies worship God, they prosper and they're successful societies. And when they begin to pull away from God's principles and they start worshiping, you know, other things besides God and putting him last place in their lives, that society will eventually crumble. And you can see that that happened many times over biblical history, and then it has also happened in A.D. since Christ was crucified. So, you know, you just take the Roman Empire and go from there on down through history, and you see all the different empires.
Okay, because I thought you were talking about, you know, more physically, that if, you know, someone doesn't worship Christ, that, you know, or God, that they're more prone towards, I guess, homosexuality or something of that nature.
Because
they're closer to the earth or something, so they have fires for each other or whatever you said it.
Yeah, it's not that it's not that they're more prone to it. It's that it leads to it because they begin to worship other things, and it gets skewed what you're supposed to worship, and then people start worshiping the wrong things, and they start twisting morality to make it work for them, however they want it to work. And so then it just happens that that's one thing that becomes of it, is that men and men burn in lust for each other, women and women burn in lust for each other. But that's only part of it. There's a lot of other sins, you know. As you know, there's a lot of things going on out there.
Yeah. Well, but you and I have, you know, and many of the audience regular listeners know that, I mean, you and I have different viewpoints on that, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just saying that's where newts come
from. That's why I ask, because I find it interesting because, well, yeah, and that's why I ask is, you know, I find it interesting because we do have different viewpoints on that issue, not issue, but, mm-hmm. You know, I guess that aspect.
You came from a Roman Catholic background.
Oh, certainly, yeah. I grew up as a Roman Catholic, and my wife is an Orthodox Catholic, and my daughter is a Roman Catholic, and I'm the oddball because I'm the pagan of the group.
Yeah.
So it makes it difficult for me sometimes, but that's okay. I love them all, you know. But you know, I do see where, you know, I do look at American history. And I think that's a great segue to our next clip with Newt. As I do, you know, what the founders based this nation on, and I believe that it did do well for the country. Perhaps it didn't do too well for, you know, my pagan kin, I guess you could say, back in those days, you know, with the burnings and all your witchiness and other things of that nature. But for the nation, you know, as a whole, I do say throughout history that it did do well for the United States, and then moving away from that, maybe not so much. But I think that's a good segue to our next here, where he's talking about, and he does make a good point about religious freedom, in history here in the United States and why it's so important here.
Are you willing for him to say it back to you? I mean, here's the point. My wife, Calista, has written 3 children's books about American history. And you go back and you look at the very beginning of them, and you realize, why did the Pilgrims come here? Because they didn't have the right to say what they believed.
Mm-hmm.
Why did the Quakers come here? Because they didn't have the right. Why was Maryland the first Catholic colony? Because they didn't have the right. Now you got a guy who's making a lot of money being who he really is. He does an interview in a magazine where he's asked, how do you define sin? And in his own way, he describes it. And now what we want to say is, boy, we want to punish you.
That is very, very different. Mm-hmm.
Right, so, and he pretty much ended there, and then he got interrupted. They came here for religious freedom, you know, be able to, you know, and speak to religious minds. They weren't able to do that. And that's all, you know, back to the controversy, and that's all he was doing. And as I pointed out earlier, in a magazine, not on the show itself. Now, I think they would have more cause, because it's not about the sin part that I think got him suspended. I think what got him suspended is he's talking about how, you know, a man should be attracted to a woman, and he don't understand how a man could be attracted to another man. And when he actually named the body part, you know, I think that was offensive too. However, he didn't say it on their program. Now, if he would have said that on the program, I could see them suspending him. I think that would be justified, but he didn't. And I think that's where what Newt is talking about, you know, with religious freedom and freedom of speech, what others are talking about, comes into play. That's where I open it up for you, Cindy. Okay, I don't know if you have anything with your mic, but you're welcome to chime in when you get that. Cindy, I don't know if you had to end up muting yourself. That's what they came over here for. We know what happened. Oh, there you go. That's okay. I don't need to be sorry. Oh, you're talking and you still had your stuff on you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. Go ahead, Cindy.
Sorry.
No, I
was going to say Rex Christie put something out today about we want to defend Phil, and we want to say he has the freedom of speech, but to tell you the truth, it's not his network. A&E can do anything they want with their network.
Right, certainly.
I think it would be a big mistake.
Yeah, they'll lose money, sure.
This guy off because of his comment, because most of their viewers are people like me and, you know, other rednecks who are totally unoffended. They are not offended by that remark at all.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's kind of silly that he would I think it's silly that A&E would make such a thing out of it, but really, they have the right to do whatever they want.
Certainly. I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying it doesn't make it. It would have made more sense, and I think it would have given them more ammunition, and perhaps it wouldn't have been as big of a controversy if he would have said it on the show itself instead of in an interview answering a direct question.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think that the First Amendment stuff comes from. Yeah, they have the right to do it. I mean, they write the contracts. That's how things work here. But I think that, you know, there wouldn't have been as much, as I said, controversy, you know, on it. I mean, maybe there would have been, but I just think they would have had stronger grounds of suspending him if that would have been the case.
Yeah.
So what do you think about go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I think it's going to cause a lot more discussion than it really warrants, and there's going to be a lot more attention given to Duck Dynasty because of it, but I think it's actually going to turn into something that's good for them rather than bad for them. But I'm sure that Phil Robertson does not feel real good about being suspended, so to speak, on his own show. I mean, that's just kind of stupid.
Right. Well, I know. And, I mean, he could possibly lose a lot of money, too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He could stand to lose a lot of money. But I think the...
Well, I don't know how much money he has, but I don't think it's going to really be a big bother to him. He's already over it.
Well, that's true. I mean, yeah, I don't know how much. Well, then I heard they're making a lot more, you know, or at least making a lot of money on the merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the merchandise that they're doing. So it may not. We'll see how that pans out. But I think
you can't even get a duck call anywhere yet. You go try to buy a duck call. If you don't go to Monroe, Louisiana, go to their factory and actually, you know, go in their little gift shop there, I don't know how you get one, to tell you the truth.
A duck call?
They're handmade, and the demand is just huge, and nobody can get them.
You know, I see all kinds of stuff for Duck Dynasty, and I'm like, I've got no clue what it is. It's, I mean, I see Duck Dynasty, and I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. I've got no clue about what the show's about. I know it's some rugged, you know, people say rednecks, and it's a show about, I don't know what they do. I don't know.
Well, it's a family that, it's just a big redneck family, and their business has been for many years making duck calls. And I don't know if they've always, you know, if that's always been their only source of income, but they certainly sell duck calls, that's for sure. And Ben, I don't know really what the story is, how they got their own reality show, but I don't know how much actual making of duck calls they do still. I know the duck calls get made, but I'm not sure exactly who it is that's making them. But anyway, I think Newt is dead on when he's talking about, you know, just this whole issue is, you know, that's the thing about Newt. He'll sit and think stuff out rationally rather than just come from some emotional place where he's, you know, just lashing out or...
Mm-hmm.
He thinks things out, and he knows where stuff is going. He knows, I don't know, he's just got a sixth sense about what culture is, what our culture is becoming. Go ahead. Did you want to say something?
Well, I was going to play the next clip because that's exactly what he points out. And he does it a great way here. Just the juxtaposition, the image of the hypocrisy of how the left handles things and how the media, you know, handles a situation like with what happened. And he asks a great question. So I'll go ahead and play it, and then before we move on, because I want to cover it, and I know you're, I want you to be able to say what you're going to. After we hear it, so here we go.
Okay.
Let me share with you how A&E explained themselves. They said his personal views in no way reflect those of A&E Network, who have always been strong supporters and champions of the LGBT community. Now, here's my question. Can you imagine how you would have reacted if they come back and said, we are strongly supporting Phil because we have always been strong supporters of Christians?
I'm a Christian. What would I say about it? I'd be like,
no,
okay.
But you can't imagine a modern news corporation saying they're strong supporters of Christianity. Because, in fact, in the modern current secular culture, that would be a shocking moment for A&E to say, you know, we think Christianity deserves to be spoken. And if that offends some people, that's fine.
You know,
because, after all, religion's often offensive.
Why you feel that way?
Did you get that? That was a little hazy, that clip, but did you get all that, Cindy?
Yeah, I'm on the phone. My phone doesn't do the audio very well as my computer does, but I think I caught what he was saying, and you're right. He's got his finger on the pulse of culture, and he's very rational. He has such a rational brain. I mean, for somebody, you know, usually you have one or the other. You have somebody that's really intelligent and, you know, just has such a good memory like he does, almost photographic memory. Mm-hmm. And you get that, but you don't get a person with a lot of good common sense. Newt has extreme intelligence, plus he has a lot of common sense. Now, you know, you have to ask yourself, does he choose common sense over political correctness, or does he choose common sense over his own survival? No. Yes. Sometimes his common sense gets him in hot water because he doesn't always want to be diplomatic. Sometimes he'll come right out and tell you the true answer, whether it's going to cost him something or not. And that's what happened to him when he was Speaker.
Oh, yeah.
It cost him dearly. He fulfilled the contract with America.
Right.
To the letter, just about to the letter, and did not let the RINOs or the Democrats stop his agenda. He got a hold of those young freshman congressmen coming in there, and he said, look, boys, we're going to do what we said we were going to do. And the establishment was going, whoa, wait a minute. We just agreed to this contract with America thing so we could get elected.
We didn't
really actually think you were going to do all this stuff.
Right. And real quick,
like,
folks,
for
the people who've just chimed in, or if those are folks who kind of like, you know, go through just parts of the show, is that if you would like to help Newt to pay off his 2012 debt and also to kind of be a motivation, at least part of a motivation for him to run in 2016, it's because, of course, he would want to run up, you know, millions of dollars of debt again, only if they don't have the support. So you could go to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com and go to the gift page, and you will find a link there that can send you to the newt.org where you can make, even a small donation would help to help him with the cost of running in 2012. I mean, I very well think that, you know, he should be and would be the president if he would have won. But you know how what happened in 2012.
It hadn't been for
the establishment, right,
his
and he, right, with his own party. That's why there's even a group on Facebook, you know, wants him to maybe even do a third party, you know, conservative party. But you know, that's for another day. But you know, check it out. You know, see what you know folks could do. Share it. Get other new supporters to do it because. You know, what Mark Prasik from the Patriot Journalist Network said, it's just we lost a national treasure, you know, not being having the opportunity for Newt Gingrich to run. Not just run, he ran in the primaries, but I mean run for president against Obama. And I just want to play this one clip. It's not really with tonight, but it does have something that I really want to hear. We never got to hear it, and because Newt never did get the opportunity to debate Obama, but this is what a debate between Obama and I do see we have another caller. If you'd like to chime in, we're going to play this audio clip, and then we'll open up the mic to you. But I do want to play this audio clip, folks, for those of you who would have liked to have heard Newt Gingrich debate Obama. But who knows, if it ends up being Hillary Clinton, this is what you could hear from Newt if he was to be in the presidential debate.
Gingrich.
Tonight, Newt Gingrich, again, I think did the best.
The guy that I'm agreeing with most up on stage is probably the guy to my left, so I would say that Newt Gingrich would be the guy.
Actually, Newt has been one of the best of the other candidates.
Newt Gingrich showed last night why many conservatives believe he is the best person to take on Obama.
Anybody who's covered Newt Gingrich over the years knows better than to underestimate him.
When Newt Gingrich goes after the mainstream media or one of their reporters, he's going after Barack Obama, and that's what the Republican primary voters want.
It actually got a standing ovation, which is fairly unusual in a debate like this.
These debates
are part of the reason why Newt Gingrich just won South Carolina.
Well, maybe we should go along with what Gingrich wants and have debates without moderators.
Why Newt Gingrich?
Well, I just think he's got the best economic plan of any of the candidates.
Tea Party Nation founder Judson Phillips says Newt is the most electable, and he's also impressed with Gingrich's debate performances.
Reagan conservative, grassroots, which is Newt Gingrich.
Let's take a look at the extraordinary men and women who make up the 104th Congress, and of course its distinguished speaker, Newt Gingrich. Barry Goldwater handed the torch to Ronnie, and in turn, Ronnie turned that torch over to Newt.
The distinction between Speaker Gingrich and President Obama will be so distinct that I think that gives him the best chance in order to be able to get elected president.
Newt Gingrich comes out as the big winner tonight.
And it's rare that the group almost unanimously picks one winner. Tell me, who won this debate?
Gingrich.
Show the audience, how many of you were backing Gingrich 10 days ago? Raise your hands. And how many of you thought that he won today?
Newt Gingrich would, he would clobber Barack Obama in any debate, any forum that had to do with substance when it comes to policy and solutions for the challenges that America faces. Newt Gingrich would clobber Barack Obama.
And what I want to do is to make sure that the plumber, the nurse, the firefighter, the teacher, the young entrepreneur who doesn't yet have money, I want to give them a tax break now, and that requires us to make some important choices. Last point I'll make about small businesses, not only do 98% of small businesses make less than $250,000, but I also want to give them additional tax breaks because they are the drivers of the economy. They produce the most jobs.
The fact is that more people have been put on food stamps by Barack Obama than any president in American history. I know among the politically correct you're not supposed to use facts that are uncomfortable. Second, you were the one who earlier raised a key point. The area that ought to be I-73 was called by Barack Obama a corridor of shame because of unemployment. Has it improved in 3 years? No. They haven't built the road. They haven't helped the people. They haven't done anything. One last thing, yes, sir. So here's my point. I believe every American of every background has been endowed by their creator with the right to pursue happiness, and if that makes liberals unhappy, I'm going to continue to find ways to help poor people learn how to get a job, learn how to get a better job, and learn someday to own the job.
Okay, folks, and I think that we've got another audio clip later that we'll play. I think that was actually a good segue into the next one that we'll play later because Gingrich was on NBC this week talking about the growing or the widening income gap, and we'll talk about that as well. But right now, it looks like we have a caller on the line. Thank you very much, 918, for calling the show. How are you?
Hi, Robert. It's Holly.
Oh, great, great. I'm glad you're able to call in, Holly. How are you tonight?
Yeah. I'm just fine, thank you. And I just called in, well, because, again, I'm not able to chat for some reason.
No, I'm sorry to hear that.
Hi, Holly.
Hi, Cindy.
How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good. I'm just.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you, Holly.
Merry Christmas to you guys. But, yeah, we're getting ice tonight, so we're hoping we keep electricity here.
Oh, boy.
You're getting ice?
Freezing,
yeah, good luck.
Freezing rain, yes.
Where are you at, Holly?
South of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, actually, that's where my daughter lives. So I hope she's going to keep her power.
Oh, yeah. So here we go again. But anyway,
she's
I was really
Texas
enjoying
right
listening to that clip. And I actually remember a lot of that. But he's just... Really, when he got that standing ovation, I think I was standing in my living room.
Yeah.
Laughing.
We all were.
To be honest. Yeah.
No, I know. I remember.
So, But anyway, how long is your show tonight, Robert? This is kind of a new thing for you on Friday night, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I normally just do Wednesdays from 10 until, well, 1 o'clock a lot of times. But, yeah, this is only the second installment. It's kind of touch and go. Something new I've been doing here on Friday nights. I've been wanting to do the new News Fridays, you know, for a long time. It just I haven't been able to do it, frankly. But I'm of the mind where, you know what, if you just don't start something, if you just say, well, you know, wait for this, wait for that, before I start something, well, you'll keep on waiting. So I decided,
yeah,
you know what, I'm just going to, one of those is, I'll wait after the holidays because it is slower. But I thought, no, just start it and get it going. I'm hoping it's a series that I'm going to have here on Friday nights for a long time. And I think it's going to be increasing the closer we get to 2014, 2016. Because it's my hope, Holly, that once again, if we can help Newt lower his debt and then also, you know, get the word out to him that there's still so many of us out there that still support him, that we can once again get him to run for 2016, because I reiterate what Mark Krasick said is, this nation, you know, in 2012 lost the opportunity to have a national treasure be the President of the United States and have, once again, I mean, how many years, you know, decades even, have we had Republicans wanting another Ronald Reagan, you know, and we had that opportunity in 2012, was it not for the establishment and what they did, and even in part the, you know, so-called conservative media and what they did as well to Newt Gingrich, and really take that opportunity away from not just the Republicans, not just the conservatives, but the grassroots and even the liberals. I mean, it's there's even people who are liberals and Democrats who are suffering under Obama. And frankly, if the establishment didn't do what they did, then we wouldn't have Obama. I truly, truly believe that if Gingrich would have gotten the nomination, he would have had those debates, and Obama would not be our president again. Newt Gingrich would. And think how much different this country, think of the path this country would be on right now if that would have happened. We have another chance. I've heard so many people saying, oh, we've got, he's getting older. Well, look how old Ronald Reagan was. And then we have people say, oh, well, we need somebody new. You hear all the time, you know, people are touting, a younger candidate, you know, maybe someone like a Ted Cruz, or some are saying Rubio or Ryan, you know, and I disagree. I mean, yeah, they're young and they can be great presidents, but, I mean, there has to be something said about experience. And to say that that Gingrich can't, speak to the youth is, I have an article here that I wasn't planning on doing until later, but I think we're going to go ahead and read it now, because it was this week that Newt was at a college. And it's at Amherst College, and the article is, Ex-Republican Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich Transcends Politics in Engaging Packed House at Amherst College. Amherst, in front of a packed Johnson Chapel on the Amherst College campus Wednesday evening, former Republican Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich engaged the students in a spirited discussion that transcends politics and, in the end, won over the crowd. Taking the stage, and these are young college kids, taking the stage to a respectful, if not initially warm, ovation from the crowd, Gingrich used a conversational tone to challenge the students to think about the past as they reflect potential futures. One of the greatest, this is a quote from Gingrich, one of the greatest challenges for your generation is to fundamentally rethink its bureaucratic model dating back to the 1880s. And it wasn't but 10 minutes into his presentation that he had the crowd laughing as he reflected on his own journey from an archaic cell phone to a BlackBerry, and then eventually a modern smartphone. I must admit, I only have an iPhone 4, Gingrich said, touting the location-based apps that helped him and his wife navigate foreign lands during their travels. Yeah, me too. Well, maybe not foreign, but here at home. But his story, although comical, was used as a device to convey to the students how change actually happens in relation to technology, and to convey how technology can inspire change, citing the Khan Academy a free online nonprofit aiming to help educate the world's students for free. It says, how many of you have visited Khan Academy? If the students at an elite liberal arts college find the Khan Academy useful, how useful should it be for students at failing schools? Gingrich asked before pointing back to his iPhone, calling it the most powerful public health device in use today. Gingrich was a college professor before his political career took off, and despite the passage of time since he worked in the classroom, he still easily makes the connection with college students. He edged into a conversation on health care carefully as he explained his stance that too much government regulation stifles innovation. It is now so expensive to get approval from the FDA, the drugs to save your life will likely be developed in another country, Gingrich said. If we had today's government in the 1800s, stagecoach lobbyists would have fought for a law saying that trains couldn't go faster than a horse because it's unfair. Taking aim at budget proposals that increase spending in the short term while promising cuts in the long term, Gingrich didn't spare his sword on a member of his own party. If you're a Republican, you're not allowed to raise taxes, so they call them fees. But it also, you know what, who was he talking about? He was talking about Mitt Romney, because that's what Romney did. He called them fees instead of raising taxes. But anyway, back to the article. But I always thought if you have no choice of paying, it's a tax, he said. I don't believe you can fix the current problems in Washington with the current left-right divide. Gingrich wrapped up his speech with a challenge to students as he cited modern developments like regenerative medicine and 3D printing. We are at the edge of breakouts that are unbelievably exciting. And, of course, folks, check out Newt Gingrich's new book, Breakout, that talks about some of these new technologies. And you can get that on Amazon, he said. And the challenge to your generation is to help make them real. Gingrich's appearance in a liberal-leaning town didn't go unnoticed by the active progressive groups that they called Hampshire County home, although the community outrage didn't come close to reaching the level that came to define the University of Massachusetts speech delivered by Karl Rove in April. There were dissenters in the crowd, but never interrupted or staged an actual protest, as was the case with Rove on the other campus in Amherst. What did they do, however, is use a question and answer session at the end to try and catch the former speaker off guard with written prepared statements and questions. As two young women took turns challenging Gingrich's support of natural gas fracking, I've got mixed thoughts on that. Anyway, they gasped when he asked if they knew which form of electrical generation killed the most birds. That is wind power, he said, to applause from an amused audience. Another woman, calling herself a refugee from Worcester, stood up to seemingly plug a book, but overall the crowd was engaged respectfully and inquisitive. Gingrich's hefty appearance fee was blah, blah, blah. Let's just talk about how it's payment. Okay. But anyway, so it sounds like that his speech at a Amherst College, which I believe it said was a more liberal-leaning college, still came, was accepted. What do you think, ladies?
Robert, have you ever saw Newt Gingrich speak?
Yes. Yeah, he was here in town one time, and I got to see him, I was kind of far back. Unfortunately, I couldn't get real close, but, yeah, I've actually got to see him speak.
I'm sorry, was it at a college or?
No, it was actually at a local restaurant here that actually has visits with a lot of folks. I even had Dick Cheney at that restaurant. So, kind of a stopping point for a lot of politicians if they're going to be running in this area.
Well, when he came through Tulsa, I drove up to see him, and it was at Oral Roberts University there in Tulsa, and there were students with the prepared questions just like you were reading just now, and he's amazing. You would have loved it. He does interact with the young people on their level. Whoever's saying that he cannot do that, they don't know what they're talking about.
No, he sure can. He has his finger on the pulse of every age group in America. He is so well studied that he knows the cultural nuances of every generation, and he knows how to speak to every one of them. And he knows that with the younger generation, they're the ones interested in new technologies and in the solving of today's problems, not by government intervention, but by our study and scientific research and technological things. Now, I saw
real quick, Sonia, I'm going to interject while I'm remembering this. Is that one of the biggest things that people, you know, were railing on Gingrich was when he sat down with Nancy Pelosi, you know, on the couch about global warming or climate change or whatever. It doesn't matter. One thing that we know about Newt Gingrich is he's a futurist. He sees, you know, he looks into the future and sees the way that, you know, we can benefit the people and the planet, okay? And he calls himself a green conservative, which is something, I mean, green conservatism, which is something that I subscribe to, or green environmental, you know, or conservative environmentalist, or, you know, whatever. You all know I'm an environmentalist. But when he sat down with, which I think a lot of folks didn't understand, and then I'll get back with what you're saying, but I just wanted to get this out, is what I think a lot of people didn't understand is that as a futurist, you know, he's looking at things we can do technology-wise, like you ladies were talking about, what we can do, you know, with technology to make sure that we have a clean, healthy planet, regardless of the debate of global warming or global climate change, but through technology, we can have, you know, that healthy, you know, green, you know, planet that he's looking at, and not the way that Pelosi is, but the way he sees it as a green conservative. And I've got a little bit of information about green conservatism on the Bard's Logic website. It's one of the last pages on there. And it's on www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And go to the green conservative page. It's the last page there on the website. And it talks a little bit about green conservatism. And I may have some links on there, linking to some things of that nature. But that's what he talks about. So when people, if he runs again, people want to bring that, oh, my gosh, on the couch of Pelosi. Remember, he's a futurist, and that's how he views it. And I think that's why he sat down to have that message, you know, about what we can do in the future technologically.
He has an open mind. He has an open mind.
Right.
Okay. If there's global warming, let's find out about it. Let's discover exactly what it is and what's causing it. Is it just a normal cycle of, you know, every 30 years we go from one to the other swing, heat and then cold, or is are humans doing something to cause it? And you only find that out by researching, but you cannot find it out. You'll never find it out with government researching. It has to be independent study because the government always wants to skew stuff. And
special
just
interest.
Like those guys, huh?
They want to sell electric cars. Special interest.
Well, yeah. They have their reasons. They have their reasons why they want. It's not just that anyway. It's all about the globalism. It's all about Agenda 21. It's all about gathering the world under one roof, say, and using the environmental issue as that one issue that joins everybody together. And so in order to save the planet, we all have to join together and be one whole worldwide nation. And that's really what it's all about. We've been solving our environmental problems for many decades now. With scientific research and, you know, cleaning water, putting scrubbers on factories. I mean, we've got a lot of things we can do. And there's a lot of things we can do to make cars more gas conservative. But guess what? Those things, every time someone comes up with a way to do better gas mileage. The government or the car manufacturers buy the idea, and then they sit on it, and they don't do anything with it, with this knowledge. We have the knowledge. You know what would not surprise me at all? I bet we have the knowledge to do nuclear fusion. I'll bet you we can take water and get power from it, and I don't mean a hydroelectric plant on a dam or something like that. I'm talking about using water to create energy. I'll bet we got it. I'll bet we're either very close to it or we've already got it. But we can't get anything like that done because the government cannot control us if we have unlimited energy and it's clean energy. They cannot control us. If that is the case, we will just be totally, we will be so wealthy and so successful and so not needing government that they just couldn't handle that. Anyway, but Newt would do it. Newt would take everything he knew and put it out there. He's not one of them. I get very frustrated people calling him a globalist because he's a member of the CFR. He is not a globalist. He is there in those meetings because Newt wants to have his finger in everything. He wants to know what's going on everywhere, in every organization. He has his fingers everywhere, listening to people, finding out what their plans are, finding out what they're doing. And that's one reason why he's a member of the CFR. He wants this. He has. It just amazes me the information he has in his brain. You ask him about any country on this planet, any trouble spot that you can mention, he has an opinion about it. He knows exactly what's going on there, and he knows what could solve that problem. It's amazing. I can hardly keep Afghanistan and Iraq straight. Anyway, he's just amazing, and he is a futurist, and that's why he sat on the couch.
Well, and that's and also there's, you know, when he talked about, you know, he got ridiculed. See, here's the things that Newt Gingrich got ridiculed for were probably, and the reason why they got ridiculed, at least in my opinion, is that those were some of the best ideas that he had. You know, one of the things he got ridiculed for, and as people do research, you know, and look more into it, when he was ridiculed about putting the colony on the moon, people were like, oh, my God. And of course, they shrouded it. And, you know, the country can't afford it, you know, and the shrouded in the bad economy. When you talk about putting a colony on the moon, well, the reason you talk about putting a colony on the moon is to get, and I'd like to do another or show or series of shows on this, is because he wanted to, you go to the moon and mine it for helium-3, which is a component that is used or that is needed to make nuclear fusion, which is a much better way of getting nuclear energy. It's a lot less radiation involved with it, you know, with nuclear fusion than fission. So, you know, it's, you know, the same as what we've got, you know, the energy we get from the sun. You know, the biggest problem is, you know, magnetic containment, things of that nature. But that's what you would go for. Now, if, you know, going back to what I said about the research, is that if people do the research, there are many countries, some of which are our enemies, that are looking into going in and having their own moon colonization programs for that very reason, to try to mine helium-3. Because it's rare here on Earth, but it's very abundant on the moon. So, you know, for people him to ridicule him for that, it's... That just do your research and find out, oh, wait a minute, because, it's not a bad idea, and there's other countries doing it.
Mm-hmm. Did you see I'm not really sure when the article came out, it's an article on Newt and Israel, Did you guys see that?
No.
How long did it come out?
I no longer have... Oh, hang on, maybe I can find it. Hold on. It wasn't too long ago. I think I got this off of the CSR page, the CSR group. Excuse me, the CRA group. You know, David's group.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if he used to let me on there. I don't know if he'd let me back on there or not.
Oh, he's not friend. He won't friend you?
I don't know. He unfriended me and kicked me out of his group on Facebook a while ago when I refused to go over to Romney. And, you know, I refused to go over to Romney's camp after the convention, and he booted me out of his group because of that, because I was still supporting Newt for the convention and then for a broker convention.
He's one of those guys that's probably more loyal to the party than the actual people. And so to him,
I'm loyal to conservatism more than I am to the party. And I mean, I know you hear other people like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh say that, but especially with Rush Limbaugh, after the way they acted during the primaries, I no longer believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me just tell you, see if I can see what it says here. I'm very impressed with Newt's, you know, as I spoke a minute ago, I'm very impressed with his foreign policy knowledge and his, oh gosh, just how he knows what to do. Anyway, it goes back to his days as Speaker of the House, and says during his first 100 days as Speaker of the House, Gingrich refused to meet with any world leader or politician that was not directly related to the agenda in his contract with America. Now you talk about that's the way to keep on focus, to keep on task, and to keep focused. Don't let everybody pull you one direction and another. And see, he really knows how to fight the that Clower and Piven agenda. Anyway, there was one exception to this rule, and that was Benjamin Netanyahu. Gingrich himself carved out a set of hardline positions on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and on Iran. In an address to the Republican Jewish Committee in June, Gingrich called for the United States to end talks with the Palestinian Authority. Unlike other politically correct 2012 GOP presidential candidates, Gingrich was the only one bold enough to historically educate that the Palestinians are an invented people. Gingrich also vowed to move the American embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. Regarding Israel, Iran, and the Obama administration, Gingrich said on Fox News Hannity, "If I were the Israelis, I wouldn't give this information, if I were the Israelis, I wouldn't give this administration 1 minute's notice because someone will leak it. Newt is a friend to Israel, and if you call yourself a conservative, you would be too." That's how the article ends. He is absolutely right. Our administration has loose lips, and you'll remember that old saying, loose lips sink ships.
Yep.
Well, he's sinking our ship. He is sinking our ship as we speak. Holly, do you remember Newt talking about the Palestinians and calling them an invented people? Do you remember him saying that?
I remember that, yep.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I was so impressed with that because he was the only one who would tell the truth. You did not hear that from anybody. You didn't hear from Santorum. You didn't hear from Bachman. You didn't hear from anybody, and especially not Romney. Not even Ron Paul came close to anything like that. this is a man that you can trust to absolutely tell the truth, and it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, Cindy, what did he say about Palestine?
He said the Palestinians are an invented people, which is
an
exactly
invented
true.
People?
And invented, I-N-V-E-N-T-E-D, invented people. They're an invention. There has never been any, they are not a...
Yeah, I remember he got a lot of
racial
black for that.
They're not a racial group out of that. They're Palestinian because they live in Palestine. The Jews are Palestinians. They're Palestinian Jews and Palestinian Arabs live there. That's who lives in Palestine. And for them to, and basically they came in from all different places where they were rejected from other Arab nations, and then during the the 1948 thing, everybody they were getting ready to go to war with Israel. The Arabs were, because they didn't like it that they had a sovereign state now. And when they were getting ready to go to war, they warned all the people. They said, look, you might want to get out of here because we're going to start something with Israel. You might want to get your, kids out of here, get your women out of here, And a lot of people took off and left Palestine, went into Jordan and other areas. And part of what is making everyone so mad, the Arabs so mad, is because all those people that left Israel before that war, they're not being allowed to just willy-nilly come back in. And so that's part of the treaty negotiations, is to have these people rejoin or re-enter into the land of Israel and go back and live there. And that for them to be saying we're Palestinians, well, they're just not. They're just a conglomeration of Arabs from different places that have come in there and lived. And they're called Palestinian Arabs because they live in Palestine. And Palestinian Jews are Jews that live in Palestine. You don't call a Jew that lives in New York City a Palestinian Jew. And you don't call an Arab that lives in New York City a Palestinian Arab. So, and nobody but Gingrich would dare to say anything like that. Good for him.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember him getting a lot of a lot of grief for that. But I do want to move back to one of the things I want to make sure I cover today, because believe it or not, we only have like 45 minutes left of live time to the show, and I promised my daughter that you heard here on the show earlier that when I was done with the show, her and I would catch a movie. So I can't do extended period tonight. So I have to keep that promise. So, but I do want to get back to something we talked about earlier, and it was about the increasing or the widening of the income gap. And I just want to play a clip here that's of Newt on ABC this week on this issue.
And let me ask you, Mr. Gingrich, Speaker, when you look at that issue of inequality, and this is something he's put front and center, the Pope has, it's something, of course, that President Obama talks a lot about. We saw the story about homelessness in New York, stark reality of the gap in the nation's biggest city. Is this an issue that Republicans should be talking about?
Absolutely. I mean, how can you justify the level of wealth in those big towers in New York City?
Right.
And the level of poverty in those alleys.
Absolutely.
And without talking about government, say, surely a society that cared, that believed every person was endowed by their creator with the right to pursue happiness, would come up with a better solution than 22,000 children that are homeless. And I think that the Republican Party has an obligation to rethink some of its indifference to the very poor. And I think the Democrats have an obligation to ask themselves, after 50 years of the war on poverty, isn't it clear the government is not a very good...
Well,
government?
Exactly.
Mr. Secretary, the war on poverty, which next year we are going to celebrate the 50th anniversary, in addition to the Civil Rights Act, the war on poverty was successful for a time. What has happened, however, over the last 30 years is that much of the ardor, much of the concern, what propelled that war on poverty has dissipated.
It's also true, though, that
of President Barack Obama, we see the problem worse. Well, the problem is worse. I think it has something to do, perhaps, with the intransigence of the Speaker's party. Because every time there was a jobs bill, every time there was an effort to expand low-income housing, every time there was an effort to provide better opportunities for young people, we're talking about equal opportunity. Equal opportunity is at the basis of this. What is baloney?
Here's the baloney. Every major city which is a center of poverty is run by Democrats. Every major city.
Yes.
Their policies have failed.
But
they're not willing to admit it. And the fact is, it's the poor who suffer from that.
Wait.
And he's right. I mean, I love that statistic that he said earlier. And I was going to say something while they were talking, but I didn't want to interrupt the clip. I was about to go off on something they said. Go ahead, Holly.
I wanted to get in on that conversation. No, it's just that, when Obama was first elected as president of the United States, he had the House and the Senate, did he not? I mean, he could have, if he wanted to.
Yeah, he pretty much had full range.
Before, he had everything going his
years.
Way. He had it right there. So why didn't he?
He was too busy giving the banks all that they wanted.
And also getting his legacy with Obamacare. I mean, that's the first thing he ran on. I mean, with Obamacare. And here's the thing. Now I remember I wanted to chime in. This guy's like, oh well, when there's a jobs bill and then increasing low-income housing. It's like, well, the jobs bill is one thing, but the thing with increasing low-income housing, the thing that gets me on that is, so you're saying instead of, as Gingrich was talking about, opening things up for them, you're talking about just giving them more stuff, giving them more housing. Well, no, it's not about giving them more housing. It's about, helping them, come up on the economic scale, climb that economic ladder. Not just, oh, well, here, we'll just, make sure that the government buys more, low-income housing, more Section 8 housing, and then just, oh, here you guys go. It's like, no, that's not how it's done. We'll just give it to them and say, okay, look what we did for you.
And never mind
them now. Well, no, and then they're building more of a constituency of dependence. Oh, well,
right.
We got to vote for these guys. We're not going to get, our housing that the government's going to help us pay for.
Obama money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got to have that Obama money. Yeah, the Fed
keeps printing out.
They ignore the fact that poverty, at one time in America, anybody that was in poverty worked very hard to get out of it. And you saw these American dream stories coming out of, people who lived in poverty ending up as millionaires and whatever, but what they've done with gimme-gimmes is they've taught half of our population to depend on the government and just be happy with just barely making do.
I've seen people on it. There's people who don't live too bad on that, on it.
Yeah. Well,
I know people who have homes that are on SSI disability. Go ahead.
They got their housing. They got their food stamps. They've got their
they need better than me sometimes.
Yeah, well, they get their welfare check or their child credit, at the end of the year, whatever, and they can actually make a living off the government, and they're not going anywhere. They're spinning their wheels, and it's generation after generation after generation.
I don't mind the child tax credit because you have to pay taxes in order to get that.
That's the problem, though. They're not. They're not paying.
They're not paying, and they're still getting.
Right. They're getting. They're giving the tax, the child tax credit to people who aren't even paying any taxes at all. Anyway, it's a welfare check is what they're getting, and it comes from you and I, because we do pay our taxes. But anyway, where was I going? Oh yeah. The reason why poverty has become, or at least welfare has become generational now, it's one generation after the other follows in the footsteps of the previous generation, because each generation is now teaching its kids, hey, you don't have to worry about trying to get out of poverty. You don't have to worry about trying to get a better education and try to do better than your mom and dad. Because, hey, we live a pretty good life here on this these food stamps and housing and whatever else I get.
They still got their big,
you know,
the flat screen TVs.
But I think they were talking about in that clip was homeless in New York. Was it New York City?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking about New York.
The homeless, and I think that's what they were talking about.
Well, again, if you look at the homeless and who they are, most of them are homeless by choice. Now, because of the bad situation we've had with our economy in the last few years, we're seeing a lot of people on the street that never were on the street before. And that is something. Now, but let me tell you something. Taxing you and I isn't going to get those people their job back. What's going to get their people their job back is to get rid of this stupid Obamacare program and let businesses know that they're not going to be taxed out of their eyeballs for and let them have the freedom to go ahead and hire those families back again that were working at one time, and then you get a person who can make a buck and make his own way, and he's not on the street. Now, there's a large population, and I live in Daytona Beach, near Daytona Beach, and so I've actually spoken to a lot of transients that live on the street. They can actually go live with their families back in some northern city if they want to. They choose to be on the street. I've met many people like that. I've also met some that were so mentally not capable of holding a job. They're just mentally not capable. Those are the ones we need to concentrate on helping. They really don't have the wherewithal to keep a job. And we have to help those kind
of
people.
Right. You need to help the people who really need the help.
Some of them did it to themselves. They fried their brain on alcohol and drugs. But others, you know, they were born that way.
Some grew up and that's all they knew, because that's what their parents, that's all they knew. But I guess it would go to the leadership in New York, too, New York City, you know, too.
Well,
but I think
a lot of
homeless are veterans, aren't they?
Yes, a lot of them are veterans, yes.
That's because I think the government doesn't take care. Now, here's the thing. I think the government should take better care of our veterans. Because it is, and the reason I don't have a problem saying that is having more money going to the veterans, you know, and it being taxpayers' money, obviously, because it's coming, you know, from the government, you know, or through the government from the people is what it really is. So it's actually us, you know, paying for them, you know, but they're making the spending. But it's because, I mean, that's their job. I mean, there are, and there always will be, and there always will be the need for government workers, and I mean, we do have a government militia, a government military. It's not, you know, we don't have privately owned military here in the United States. So that's, you know, I mean, I hate every time I hear them talking about, you know, not hate, but I don't really like to hear when they cut a lot of the military, because, you know, what they're really not cutting is, I don't think they ever really cut the waste when they cut government spending, is they cut things that the military needs. And the waste is still there.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Yep.
They try to figure a way to save money somewhere else so that they can keep sending money to their companies that they, you know, that charge them $500 for a gallon of gas. And that's one that brings me to one of Newt's. Did you see Waste Beyond Belief, the Newt Gingrich, the Gingrich Productions article?
Yeah, send me some of those. I'd love to have those on here. Oh, wait a minute, let me check. Cool. Oh, when did it come in? So I've got a couple articles I was going to.
I just got this today. Oh,
You know what? I did. That is one of the articles I had set to. That is one of the articles I had set to read. Let me see here. Yep, Waste Beyond Belief. That's right here.
Yep.
And I'll go ahead and read it now. It says, Waste Beyond Belief. Do you remember spending almost $1 million in the last few years on a website devoted to romance novels? How about that $17.5 million you spent on brothels in Nevada? Or the $200,000?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I want to get in on some of that. No, I'm married now. I can't do that anymore. Yeah, but anyway. Oh, no, it's not Bard's Logic After Dark. I'm just kidding, Holly. It's not Bard's Logic After Dark right now. No, but on a serious note, I'll continue.
After Dark with Mark Prasek.
What's
that?
After Dark with Mark Prasek,
Yeah, we had some fun, huh?
Yeah.
Or 200,000 training record industry executives to a world tour. No? Well, technically, you didn't spend all that money. Your government did. But it was your money the government spent. Romance novels and record tours are just a few among dozens of outrageous expenditures Senator Tom Coburn has cataloged in his 2013 Waste book, the latest of his annual reports to remind us of just how out of control the federal government has become. The entire report is worth reading, if only for the experience of discovering example after example of scandalous use of taxpayer dollars, each more absurd than the last, none of which you've ever heard of. For instance, the State Department recently spent $5 million on custom crystal wine glasses for its embassies. You said spent $300,000 on 600, yep, this is probably what you're talking about. You said spent $300,000 on 600 gallons of diesel in Afghanistan, $500 per gallon, or 100 times the going rate. Amtrak lost $60 million last year, alone providing food service on its long-distance routes, some of which include complimentary wine and cheese and offer gourmet meals subsidized by taxpayers. I guess it's the stuff the senators get. Anyway, I go on. And the USDA gave $100,000 grant to a North Carolina distillery to explore the feasibility of the company making vodka out of yams in a virtually dry county. Vodka. But anyway, the department also gave nearly $17 million to dozens of businesses to fund the creation of products such as salsa and Bloody Mary mix. Well, yeah, I think I kind of like that. I like salsa. No, but anyway. Senator Coburn's Waste Book is more than just a list of wasteful programs, however. It is a perfect documentation of the advanced breakdown in government we see through the federal bureaucracy. This is Newt talking about his new book, Breakout. He says, in my new book, Breakout, I describe three kinds of breakdown in government. The breakdown in simple competence, the breakdown in common sense, as you were talking about earlier, and the defined purpose, and the breakdown of the rule of law. So, Cindy, there you go. He's talked about common sense. We see all of them in the report. Large parts of the government are simply incompetent at performing the tasks they have taken on. The Waste Book includes $11 billion worth of improper payments the IRS made on the earned income tax credit last year alone. This is as much as 28% of all its earned income tax credit payments, an unbelievably high error rate. Well, man, send some of these funds my way. But anyway, as the report points out, causes the IRS to erroneously dish out more money in improper payments, the entire budgets of the Environmental Protection Agency. See, leave the EPA alone. No, but anyway, I thought that'd get one of you guys. But anyway. So I don't know. I guess I have a soft place in my heart for the EPA, but now they do things I don't like. But I just, you know what? Actually, I'm going to go off on a tangent here. Is that's another thing about with Newt? Yeah, I'll tell you what. Well, it's about Newt. It's on point. Is Newt was talking about when he was running, instead of the EPA, instead of the Environmental Protection Agency, he was talking about an environmental, what do you call it?
It was a study group, but I don't remember exactly.
I can't remember what it was called. I'm in a brain freeze. It's Environmental Solutions Agency or something like that. I'll have to look at one of my green energy or green conservation or conservation and conservatism audio clips.
They have too much power now.
I think he was talking about consolidating, you know, making it, instead of so many agencies, just bring it down to one or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As far as the EPA, I kind
of... Well, I think you said get rid of the federal level because we do have EPAs on the state level. I mean, there are state-level environmental protection agencies.
Those three agencies right there that he talks about, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of the Interior, and the Department of Labor. To tell you the truth, those three departments right there could just go take a flying leap, because what those people do is they spend all their time staying in power and keeping their paychecks coming in, and they don't really do the job that they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the Environmental Protection Agency should have no business setting policy and making laws. Basically, they make laws that we have to follow. And you look at these smart meters, that something's got to be done. That how can they make policies like that, and the Congress has nothing to do with it? That's something you look at the
mm-hmm.
All right, when our laws have been set
as extra constitutional powers.
Yes, and we've been set up in the past where you have to have a warrant to go search someone's house, their property, their belongings, whatever. You have to have a warrant to tap a phone, a warrant to whenever you want to investigate someone, you have to have a warrant. It's always been that way. Now, because of the way government agencies have, for instance, like the Homeland Security Agency, they have took it upon themselves to just bypass all of those laws we have against illegal search and seizure, to bypass our amendments, and they've decided they're going to send drones over our house to take pictures of our property. They're going to tap our cell phones without our knowledge. They're going to get our confiscate our emails or anything else we have on our computers without our knowledge.
Are you talking about the NDAA? Because I've got a something that I got from Arlene, who shares the link of the show, and I appreciate that, Arlene, where she's got a link that I'm going to send you guys, and I'm going to read off this list. And I apologize for interrupting, but I told Arlene I'd get this out, and you mentioned it, so I was like, bing, okay. Says, take a good look and remember these people when you want your vote. When they want your vote, vote them out. It says, last night the Senate voted to reauthorize the National Defense Authorization Act and approved $607 billion in military spending, which, you know, depends what you're spending on. Only 12 Republicans and a measly 3 Democrats opposed the bill. Senate minority, okay, there's more to it. Senate Minority Whip John Cornyn, Texas, and potential 2016 hopeful Senator Rand Paul and Ted Cruz all voted nay. Senator Cruz released the following statement. Today I voted against the National Defense Authorization Act. I am deeply concerned that Congress still has not prohibited President Obama's ability to indefinitely detain U.S. citizens arrested on American soil without trial or due process. The Constitution does not allow President Obama or any president to apprehend an American citizen arrested on U.S. soil and detain these citizens indefinitely without a trial. When I ran for office, I promised the people of Texas I would oppose any National Defense Authorization Act that did not explicitly prohibit the indefinite detention of U.S. citizens. Although this legislation does not or does contain several positive provisions that I support, it does not ensure our most basic rights that American citizens are protected. It says this is grouped by vote. The ones who voted yay, oh my gosh, and it is a lofty list. But I tell you what, I'm going to have the ones who voted nay. If you have a senator that you don't hear their name, they're the ones who voted for the legislation for the NDAA. So if you hear them, that means they did not. If you don't hear it, they did. And the ones who did not are Wyoming's Barroso, Republican, Republican from Oklahoma, Coburn, Republican from Texas, Corker, Republican from Idaho, Crapo.
Corker's Tennessee.
Tennessee, I'm sorry, what did I say?
Texas.
Oh, Cruz is Texas, Corker, Tennessee, thank you. I need to look closer at the screen with my glasses on.
That's okay.
Enzi, Republican, Wyoming, Flake, Arizona, Lee, Utah, Merkley, Democrat, Oregon, Paul, Kentucky, Republican, Risch from Idaho, Sanders, an independent from Vermont, Sessions, a Republican from Alabama, and then Shelby, Republican from Alabama, and Wyden, Democrat from Oregon. So, your senators, including, well, I guess would be my senators, here in Ohio, Portman, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute now, I didn't hear Rubio's name in there. Does that mean Rubio voted for it?
Rubio did vote for, and so did Scott in South Carolina. Rubio did vote for the NDAA. Yes, he did. So did Portman. So did Brown. Well, I don't. But yeah, Rubio did. And so for those folks who are touting, and if you're against the, I just got a message here from Arlene. Anyway, so if people are thinking about Rubio as a possible 2016 candidate, just remember, if he gets questioned about the NDAA, if he does indeed run, remember, he did vote for it on this vote. For those of you out there who were considering supporting Rubio.
Wow. Is that article, put that article in the chat for me, would you?
Yeah, I'll put the link here in the chat for you.
Okay.
And folks, you can also find that list on the Bard's Logic Political Talk group that you can join. Just a small cadre of friends here. But, of course, I'm always welcome to have people join and make it larger. So you can find it just by going to the search engine there on Facebook and look for the Bard's Logic Political Talk group, and you can find the list there. But for those of you here live, here is the link in the that's the link for tonight's show. Let me get the link for that in there.
I'm going to put in also that that Tom Coburn site.
Okay. There we go. There's the link inside the chat.
Okay.
And for those of you listening on the archives, of course, as I said, you can find the article or the list on the Bard's Logic Political Talk group. Please feel free to join. Of course, there's also the Bard's Logic Political Talk page on Facebook as well. Like the page. I'd appreciate it. And also, one thing I haven't talked about for a while, there is a follow button that you can find here on the homepage of Bart's Logic Political Talk on here on Blog Talk Radio. If you just push the follow button and follow the show, I haven't asked folks to do that for quite a long time, but that would be great. All that does is send you an email and inform you when there's going to be a show. So, of course, when you know there's going to be new shows such as News Fridays, you'll be informed, and then also you'll be informed of the shows that we have live here on every Wednesday night. Of course, it will not be this Wednesday. I will not be. I may put some Christmas music together. If I got some time, I may put a couple hours of the Christmas music together and just play that on Christmas night. But we'll see. Unfortunately, I got to go back to work the next day after Christmas. I'd so much rather have the day after Christmas off than Christmas Eve, just because that I have my daughter on Christmas Day.
Well, you don't have to do the shopping and the cooking, obviously.
I do the shopping.
We need our day off in front of the
No,
holidays,
I don't do the cooking. That's
cooking.
True.
Yeah, we got to bake pies and cakes and cookies and get all that stuff ready to go.
Yeah, actually, that's what I'm having to do first Sunday is to make some cookies. Well, tell you what, folks, there are a few people, or a few minutes is what I meant to say. So if people want to call in, we've got about 19 minutes left of live time, and I would bring this to extend the version if I hadn't made a promise to my loving dollar you heard earlier. Well, I promised to put a movie on, and it'll be midnight here.
Well, that's all right. I really 19. Have a lot to do anyway.
So we all do. It's Christmas season. But if anyone would like to chime in, you know, the thing you heard tonight, it's 347-945-7428. I know it's the Christmas season, so we won't be live unless I, you know, do the Christmas music. And I believe the Wednesday after that is New Year's Eve, and that is one of the things I do like to celebrate. Is New Year's, so I'll be with some family New Year's Eve night, so I won't be having a show then. I may have News Fridays, either the Friday after Christmas or the Friday after New Year's, but it's an ongoing work. But I'll, of course, keep folks posted on Twitter and Facebook. And speaking of Twitter, definitely check out the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And also check out the Patriots Bunker. And actually, you will see a link to Bard's Logic, Political Talk, on the Patriots Bunker. And it's pretty cool because you just go on there, and I'll put the Patriots Bunker in the chat. Did you, were you there on that show when we had Gordon Keller on, Cindy?
Gordon Keller? Oh, yeah.
Taylor? Yeah, the Patriots Bunker. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yes.
If you go to there, it's www.thepatriotsbunker.com. I'll put it in the chat. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool because on the front page, you will find a little block, blue block, that says Bard's Logic on it next to Refugee Radio. And it also is among little buttons that will take you to the Drudge Report, The Blaze, Brett Bart, Fox News. So we have Bard's Logic right there in the same area where you get information from Fox News. We're getting there here on Bard's Logic, Political Talk. And you can see that in, among the other resources on the Patriots Bunker. And I really appreciate Gordon for putting Bard's Logic up there. And actually, if you look at the website at www.thepatriotsbunker.com, you'll see the button for Bard's Logic right above the foxnews.com little thing you've got there. So it's not a button or anything. It's just showing you that's where the links underneath come from. So it's right there. I appreciate it. You also have buttons for Glenn, Rush, Sean. Well, I don't even want to talk about that guy. But the most important one, of course, is the Bard's Logic one.
Okay, there's also a article in WesternJournalism.com, too, that I just put in the chat That is also about the senators who voted. So there's lots of information out there for people. You can get an idea who voted for it, and then start writing some letters to our senators. I am extremely disappointed in Rubio because he had been lately doing a lot of conservative things to try to make up for his immigration stand.
Mm-hmm.
Now he has just run himself right back down into the ground as far as I'm concerned, and I can't imagine. The only thing I can think of is that the establishment Republicans got a hold of him. See, that's the thing.
Newt, if he was president and running for president. So
Newt would never be cajoled into something like that.
Never.
You know, given away our sovereignty. He is, I don't know, sometimes I just wonder about these people. And see, here's the thing. Rubio and some of these other guys that are in there now, really, they come from another culture. Their parents came from another culture. They are from another culture. And I don't know that they really understand the importance of the sovereignty of the United States.
Certainly.
Maybe for them, for immigrants, recent immigrants anyway, maybe for them, joining a worldwide culture is not such a big deal. I mean, they changed their culture by moving here, and others do that as well.
Well, maybe not necessarily change their culture as much. I mean, some did, I guess, but a lot haven't. That's why multiculturalism, you know, increasing here in America. But go ahead.
Well, I think Rubio definitely did change his culture by coming here.
Oh, yeah,
here.
It's Rubio.
But basically, when you have it in ingrained in you, your previous culture, it takes generations to work that out of you. Like when all the Irish came in and all the, the Polish,
Italian.
The Italians, you know, all those people started coming in through Ellis Island, like all just millions, you know, millions of them, you could see that it took a long time for them, and that's why we still have.
Well, a lot of them had a hard time. Even a lot of Irish had a hard time here when they first came over.
Yeah.
So you had to stay within your group
that,
unit. Go ahead.
I think that immigration is that's why this kind of thing doesn't really move Rubio to stand against it, because I'm not so sure being part of a one world order is so against his culture. I don't know. I don't know that because I don't know Rubio personally, but I'm just thinking, why would they vote for something like this? If you weren't for a one world order, if you weren't for globalism, why would you vote for this kind of a thing? Why would you vote for anything that the UN was doing right now? It's beyond me. There's no common sense to it.
And Newt Gingrich, he would always say that, you know, when he was running for president, if I became your president, I pledged you my life, my fortune, my sacred honor. So, no, he would never do that.
And
no,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because about globalists, because someone asked Newt Gingrich if he was a globalist one time, and here's the answer.
Patricia Sullivan has our next question.
Speaker Gingrich, the Tea Party movement has encouraged citizens to get engaged and get informed. Research has led some to label you a New World Order, One World Government Bilderberger. Are they right?
You know, that's a list worthy of a Mitt Romney ad. I mean, that's a... I am a very strong defender of American sovereignty. I co-chaired a task force in the United Nations with Senator George Mitchell, which called for the United Nations to be radically overhauled. I am prepared to issue a special order blocking Agenda 21 from being implemented. I have never been to a Bilderberger meeting, and it almost sounds like a novel, frankly. And I am committed deeply and passionately to American exceptionalism and the principle that our rights come from our Creator, that we are different, and that we should never allow American exceptionalism to be submerged in any kind of international order, because by definition, most of the world has not yet found a constitutional system that protects their rights. So I think my record is pretty clear on that.
Well, there you go, folks.
There you have it.
Good for him. Man, why couldn't we have him for our president?
I'm telling you. Well, because the damn, you don't know I cuss much on this show, but the damn establishment of the Republican Party was forcing a candidate down our throats that we knew couldn't win. But he was, they have the next, his next turnism, just like McCain was after Bush, right? And then after Bush was, was McCain, so it was McCain's turn. Well, Romney was in second place during the, when McCain won. So now it's Romney's turn, and plus the rhinos ruled, in the leadership and now even in the politicians. They're two separate entities. But
now I have a question that's pretty simple and I should know it and I don't.
Okay.
How many times can someone actually run for president?
Oh, I don't think there's a limit.
I don't think there's any limit on how many times you can run.
Unless you win. Then you only get two chances.
Well, yeah, I just...
No, I think you could continue to run. I mean, Newt's only ran for president once, so this would only be his second time around. That's why I keep, a little motto I'd love to get out there is keep, get the train rolling now, because we know once you get a train started, it's hard to stop. Well, that's
hard
why I think we need... Right. And that's why we need to start, getting this out about, hey, look, Newt 2016, yeah, it's only 2013, it's almost over, and we got to concentrate on 2014 is important. Sure it is. And there's going to be plenty of folks out there who are going to be concentrating, and they're going to be working towards 2014. Great, it needs to be done, but there also needs to be just as many folks who are going to be out there already working to 2016. I think we need to get out there. We need to work for Newt Gingrich. We need to do whatever we can for Newt Gingrich. He is the national treasure that Mark Prasick talks about, okay? Mm-hmm. And we really need Newt Gingrich. One of the ways to do that is to go to www.bartslogicpoliticaltalk.com, go to the gift page, or go there directly. You don't even have to go through the show's website, okay, to get there. But go to newt.org, donate, whatever you can, even if it's the $250 that we talked about, which actually, that was a great program, but I think that kind of hurt him when he did, give $2.50, because I think a lot of people gave just $2.50, and it didn't really garner him the money that he really needed. It's Monday morning quarterbacking. But in this sense, whatever, shows his support, because if he can get enough support where people will get him out of debt, people are like, oh my gosh, they want me, they need me, they will support me. Now, he got support and he got a lot of it, and I think he could have gone a much farther and gotten even more support, if it wasn't for, the establishment and the so-called conservative media continually touting that Romney was the most electable. Romney was the only one who could beat Obama, and
we knew that
was not that.
You had so many different ones running on the conservative side.
Well, that's true. It was always, who's going to go up against Romney? And I think some of the candidates, I won't name names, but I think some of the candidates, were kind of plants, and I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but I think some of them were plants to try to, keep the conservative vote split, so that Romney would end up coming on top. I think that's one thing. And I've got some strong speculations that Newt Gingrich's campaign in itself and the people who were supposed to help him with logistics sabotaged his campaign from within.
Different ballgame 2016, because obviously Obama cannot run again.
Right.
Right.
Well, I think you're going to push Hillary Clinton. There's a couple other Democrats. That are going to be out there, but I think it'll be Hillary Clinton. And, he beat Hillary Care. Newt Gingrich beat Hillary Care. hello, who's the best person to beat Obamacare? He beat Hillary Care. Hello, who is the best person to beat Obamacare? Newt Gingrich, who beat Hillary Care. And then, seriously, how can you have expected Mitt Romney, who was his Romney Care was the forefather of Obamacare, how can you expect him to beat him? Well, obviously, it didn't.
You have to have two different candidates. If you don't want the vote split, you have to have two different candidates. If you have two candidates that are almost the same, then you're going to split your vote. That's just the way it's going to happen. And for the establishment Republicans to tell us conservative Tea Partiers, for them to tell us that we're destroying the Republican Party because we have to have it our way or the highway,
right?
And so they are splitting. We're splitting up our party. That is an absolute nonsense. It's them that is splitting up our party because they're splitting the national vote. Because you're not taking the conservatives that would be voting if you got them behind a candidate they could believe in.
Right, because they're principled people.
Yeah, and you look at all the moderates, which is that's the group they want to get, right, the moderates? Okay, so how is the moderate going to vote when his choices are Obama or Obama II? You know, he's going to split his vote. Now, if you want to get all the moderate vote, pick one or the other. Give them a conservative or give them a liberal, and let them pick which way do they swing more. Does this moderate swing more to the conservative side? Maybe they're very fiscally conservative, but they're not socially conservative. Okay, or go to the Democrat side. Let's say a moderate is considered a moderate because he's maybe he's a pro-life person, but he's been a Democrat all his life. His dad's a Democrat. His grandpa was a Democrat, and his grandpa before that was a Democrat. And so he's just a Democrat. He's just going to vote for a Democrat because he's a Democrat.
Well, and then back with the difference, quote-unquote, between Romney and Obama. Well, just listen to the Romney-Obama debate.
Mr. President, just how different are you from Governor Romney?
Now, let me be clear. I agreed with Governor Romney on many things. For instance, abortion. He was pro-choice most of his adult life. So was I. But he changed his position when he became presidential candidate Romney.
Hold on.
Now, let's take guns. Now, Governor Romney and I, we were in complete agreement on gun control. Now, that is, until he changed his mind.
But I...
And on health care, I was so inspired by Romney Care that I nationalized it and called it Obamacare.
Whoa.
But now presidential candidate Romney is against the individual mandate and universal health care. I agreed with Governor Romney on many things, but this presidential candidate Romney, I don't even know the guy. Then again, he doesn't seem to know himself.
Oh, come on.
Governor Romney?
Getting our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Wow.
I know. I get a chuckle every time I hear that.
That's cute.
Well, we have 2 minutes left.
We just have a few minutes. I mean, it can go into an extended version, but I did promise my daughter that I wouldn't do it too long. Maybe I could I could ask her if she'd be okay with it. You know, we'll see.
No, that's okay. You go do your family thing.
I'm basically going to get off of here anyway and kind of look at the weather here. So.
Okay, well, we only have like 60 seconds worth of live time, so I want to thank everyone who came and listened to the Newt News Friday here. And, of course, the archives will be available, so we'd appreciate it if you share the link to all your Newt Gingrich fans, have them come to the show. We'd really love to have other folks come in and contribute. Thank you, Holly. Thank you. For coming in as well, and thank you very much, Cindy, for coming in tonight as you do all the other nights. I really appreciate it for you coming in. So, folks, I think that audio clip was very appropriate to end the show with the audio clips, because I think it really, you know, helps to illustrate what we could have had and what we end up getting, but what we still can have again. So, good night. Thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing everyone else. Take care, and we will end tonight, as I do every night, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. So thanks again, and good night.
Thank you, Robert. Merry Christmas, you guys.
Merry Christmas, folks. Thanks for calling in tonight.
It was great hearing from you, Holly.